Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, December 27th, 2018. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today is Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me on the special edition of TDO.
Special in a variety of ways. First of all, it is the Kelly and Andrew show today. And also special because our surprise holiday season gift to you is yet another show where we don't have to talk about security and the problems and the problems that other people neglecting security can cause you, even if you're not. So today we are going to talk about a court case. Our first topic today is some news on the Qualcomm v. Apple front. Andrew, you want to take us through that?
Yeah, so basically, Qualcomm has first went to court in, against Apple in China, and, and as a result, Apple, it was over some software things in iOS 12, and Apple sent out an update that corrected these patented issues, and then in Germany, it was a hardware patent, so I think it was iPhone 7s and 8s ended up getting banned.
That sounds right, because 10s, like the 10 and up, I think were all available, and so Apple didn't really feel bad about not being able to sell those older models for a short period of time.
Yeah, and in China, too, Apple stopped selling older models as well.
Okay.
So, but apparently Qualcomm wasn't happy about this and accused Apple of not taking the issue seriously. And as a result, they are calling for a Chinese court to fine, detain, or ban Apple lawyers from leaving China. And there's a civil procedure law that can actually like do this. So they aren't just threatening to do it. It's possible that it could actually happen.
Now, that's the thing is when I first saw this story, the way it was portrayed in the article that I admit I glanced through was that it was just sort of this is what the lawyers want to do. And it didn't really sound like there was any reality behind it. But it turns out there is reality behind it. That if the judge were to agree, you're absolutely right. Apple's lawyers are terrible and they're violating this and they're not taking it seriously, which is a pretty subjective thing, in my opinion. Then we can put them in jail. And so that is a very real possibility. Now, I also understand that, and I would hope the court understands as well, that anytime anyone remotely affiliated with Apple does anything, it generates a ton of headlines. So if they were in fact to jail this indeterminate number of lawyers for Apple, I feel like it would get so much attention for so long that like by the time they actually put the lawyers in the jail cell, it would be time to take them out again thanks to all of the scrutiny from the rest of the world. I feel like that's what would happen. I can't guarantee that or anything, but I really feel like that's what it would be. So, So they've asked, we haven't heard anything about what's been ruled in that particular situation, but the issue that we're talking about here is a slightly different issue in both places because people are hearing about Qualcomm issues in Germany, like Qualcomm versus Apple in Germany, and then also Qualcomm versus Apple in China. And what's the difference between those two?
Basically, like I was saying, in Germany, it's as I understand it, it's mostly focused on these some type of hardware patent. And in China, it's a software patent. I'm not sure what kind of like software, like I could understand the hardware thing, but I don't know what kind of software patents Qualcomm would have that would affect iOS.
Yeah, and that's
because it had something to do with like animations by opening and closing apps, I think.
Yeah, I want to say it was something like that, but it also seems like we do have an article from October about how Qualcomm in Qualcomm wants China to ban iPhones because Qualcomm says it invented Force Touch. So I wonder if maybe it's related to something like that.
So, yeah, that's possible.
I'm interested to see, but only like in this case, because it seems like the tactics are escalating from the court. This isn't just, you know, somebody filed a brief and somebody else filed a brief and somebody made some argument and somebody else made some other argument. This is different in that I don't know in all the cases that we've watched Apple battle out that anyone ever said Apple's lawyers need to go to jail. I don't know if we've ever made it quite that far with something like this. You know, generally what happens is something a little more civil, I guess, for lack of a better word. No one ever, I don't know that Apple's ever demanded other lawyers have, you know, need to go to jail either. I've just seen...
I don't think so.
Yeah, not that I can think of. You know, and I admit I don't follow all of those cases very, very closely, but it seems like a thing that, again, if Apple did it, it would generate a ton of headlines. So it seems like something we would have heard about if Apple's lawyers said Qualcomm's lawyers need to go to jail or Samsung's lawyers need to go to jail. Seems like something we would have heard about.
Yeah.
So,
and with the hardware patent, so I'm going to see if I can boil this down in a way that people can make sense of it. Mm-hmm. And this is how it, maybe I'm wrong about this, I don't know, but this is what I've been able to cobble together. So there's this thing called FRAND, which mm-hmm. stands for Fair, Reasonable, and Non-Discriminatory. And it's basically this voluntary licensing commitment between the owner of an intellectual property right, usually mm-hmm. a patent, mm-hmm. and the standard setting organization. And this has to do with Qualcomm's chips and iPhones. Mm-hmm. So basically, Apple and Qualcomm are fighting because Qualcomm has basically a monopoly in this area. Uh-huh. And under FRAND, I think this means that since Qualcomm's chips are in so many devices, it becomes essential. So some type of licensing thing changes. Mm-hmm. But I think that Qualcomm is, as one person put it, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. They're both saying our tech is FRAND and it's not. And they're kind of forcing companies to license their chips at, mm-hmm. you know, on their terms, on their prices, instead of under this fair licensing agreement.
Yes.
So
it seems what I've seen of it is of the RAND or FRAND stuff. Some people have fair at the beginning and some people just have reasonable and non-discriminatory terms.
Okay.
So, and sometimes it's fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory terms. So it sort of seems like if you were a band who wanted to put a cover of a song on a record, you don't necessarily need permission in order to do that. There's a thing called compulsory licensing. And then, like, the person who originally wrote the song just starts getting checks because those royalties are just handled. Mm-hmm. So it makes it so that, like, it's okay for you to cover that song because it's all sort of okay. Like, it's sort of a thing that you can do. Now, some people, you know, will ask, and if they don't get permission, won't do it. And that has nothing to do with legality. That's just like, I'm trying to be cool about this. Because mm-hmm. you don't, in most cases, you don't have to have that permission. And so this is the same sort of thing. Like, the chips that Qualcomm makes have gotten to a point where they sort of have to be, where they're considered essential and have to be licensed. And so Apple was using those licenses, and now suddenly it seems like Qualcomm has changed its mind on all of that.
Yeah. Like, Apple is licensing it on one thing. Qualcomm wants them to license it at another thing while still claiming that they're abiding by this voluntary thing, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah. So they're sort of trying to come at it both ways. and probably not doing a great job of that, from what I can tell. because you're either one or the other. Like, you can't do this stuff under RAND or FRAND licensing and then end up, you know, and then go, wait, you know, I take all of that back. I want to license it, you know, and then it sort of sounds like they've sort of changed horses mid race, you know, because now they're like, no, you're going to license it for this amount of money because it's ours. And, you know, and it didn't used to be that way. And so I'm very interested to see where this goes, partly because we've seen cases decided by judges who are well-versed in patent stuff, and we've seen cases handled by judges who are less well-versed in patent stuff. So hopefully the judge in this case knows their way around and will be able to deliver something fair, whether or not it's for Qualcomm or for Apple. You know, that's not for me to say, obviously, but I'm interested to see where it goes, because if it is just a matter of Qualcomm changing horses mid-race, then I definitely want it to come down in favor of Apple, because if that's the case, if that's what happened, then Apple was doing what they were supposed to be doing all along, and it was Qualcomm who decided to change the rules all of a sudden and take Apple to court. So. Yeah.
And then, you know, while all this is going on, Apple is slowly just cutting everyone all together and making their own chips.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like we said in previous podcasts, I think it's just a matter of time before Apple makes its own modems, because they already make their CPUs. So, like I said in my article, I think Qualcomm might be kind of shooting itself in the foot.
I do too.
If they're going to be so aggressive that they want Apple's lawyers jailed, and they're going to be losing a lot of business, I think.
And I wonder if this is why they took them to court. Maybe the demanding jail time was a little too far. But I wonder if, like, they sort of understand that, you know, this is the lay of the land. And, you know, Apple's in the process of disentangling from any sort of relationship with Qualcomm altogether. And this is Qualcomm's last-ditch effort to try and get as much money out of them as they can before that happens.
Yeah, and that's what Apple said in a statement. Qualcomm's campaign is a desperate attempt to distract from the real issues between our companies.
Yeah, we're trying to break up with you. I'm just not that into you anymore. You know, particularly, like, yeah, and, like, literally, if they're going to end up building their own in-house, then, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, yeah. And we've talked about that before, and we've talked about how it's entirely possible that that's where Apple's going to end up. And part of that reason is because it would minimize stuff like this, where they have to have relationships with other companies. And because of how big those companies are, I mean, look at Samsung. Like, Apple relies on Samsung for certain components, and Samsung is also a competitor in the mobile phone space. So, you know, I imagine it would just get easier to sort of do everything themselves anyway. Because if you need to get approval for something, you just walk down the hall instead of having to make a deal with another company. That seems, it seems like overall that would be a lot easier. But I remember when Apple made all their own stuff, and yeah. So maybe we'll talk about that on another show. Because,
future episodes.
Yeah, it was interesting while it lasted. There's a whole thing that goes along with that. And what happened when Apple changed their mind on that and decided, yeah, you know what we're going to do is we're going to just have Intel stuff in our computers from now on. And yeah, that went well. anyway, so we will absolutely talk about that on a future episode as soon as we have more to report. In the meantime, I want to talk to you about our sponsors. Our first sponsor is Eve Home. Eve Home allows you to take control of appliances and other items in your home. You can switch appliances on and off with a tap on your phone. You can use a Siri voice command or a Siri shortcut. So if you want to talk to your phone a little more conversationally, you can just tell your phone to do the thing and, you know, turn on the light or turn on other, you know, turn on the coffee maker or whatever it is you've got. You can also see how much power your appliances are using that are connected to the Eve Home system. It's all HomeKit enabled, so not only do you get the ease of use of being able to boss everything around using the assistant in your phone, you also get the advanced security that comes along with being HomeKit enabled, because that all has to be reasonably secure before Apple will certify it for HomeKit in the first place. You can set things up very, very easily. It's a direct connection using Bluetooth, so you don't have to have another little box that's plugged in somewhere that hangs off your network and screws everything up when the Wi-Fi goes down. It's all done over Bluetooth, so it's really easy to set everything up, operate all of those items. You can set timers, you can track energy use, and like I said, you can control everything with your voice. You can learn more about the place you care about the most, Elgato's Eve Energy. Understands your energy consumption, and like I said, all you need to do to find out more is go to evehome.com, that's EVEHOME, and learn more about what they have to offer you. Our second sponsor today is Ops Genie by Atlassian. And when it comes to incidents, either planned or unplanned, it all comes down to how your company responds. Prompt, precise alerting is the critical first step, and with applications being more complex than ever, incidents often require coordination between operations teams and development teams. That's why there's Ops Genie by Atlassian. Ops Genie empowers those teams to plan service disruptions and stay in control during unplanned ones. Teams have the power to respond quickly and efficiently, and the right people get notified thanks to integrations with lots and lots of services. You can go to opsgenie.com, sign up for a free company account, and add up to 5 team members today. Now, the second thing we want to talk about is something that came up while we were sort of talking and prepping the show today, and that is a very entertaining take on an article. Over at the Macalope. So here's sort of the setup. The setup is Apple Watch Series 4 offers you some new and interesting health metrics by which you can measure different things like your heart rate, and there's also the fall sensor, you know, that we've talked about before, and how that stuff is pretty great. The interesting thing to me about this was I actually saw this headline go by, and it was the headline of an article that asked if Apple Watch is causing a run on emergency rooms. And when I saw that headline, I went, how can you, but what? That was basically my reaction. And I decided I wasn't going to dignify such a clickbaity headline with a click. And so I just continued to scroll by it because I just thought it was a patently ridiculous thing, because all I could think of was, if your Apple Watch, first of all, your Apple Watch tells you a number of times that this is not the same as having a doctor diagnose you. This is not actual medical information. And it tells you more than one time as you walk through setup that it's not going to tell you if you're having a heart attack. So you can't use it for those sorts of things. But, the person who wrote the article talks about how if you're using the heart monitoring feature, it could be alerting you to stuff. And if it's alerting people to things, then sometimes those people are calling their doctors and asking about the issue. Like, this is what my watch says. What does that mean? And, like, on the one hand, you know, yeah, I can see that being a concern. However, on the other hand, I also know from a couple of people I know who are not cardiologists, but people who are in the business of knowing things about heart rates and what's healthy and how to make that stuff work, you know, and like, what's normal operation and what's weird and that kind of thing, have looked at the settings. Like, I walked through the setup with my watch, and they looked at it and they went, well, yeah, you know, regardless of who you are or what you're doing, if that's the kind of heart rate that you're hitting regularly, you should have your watch alert you, because that's not, whatever's causing it, it's not good. So that's sort of what's happening. And, you know, with people being able to just sort of buckle a heart rate monitor on their arms now, which is all, you know, which is what we're talking about with regards to the Apple Watch, it seems like this is again, this is just me. It seems like that it would only be good to have more information.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, particularly being easier. And, you know, maybe it's just a matter of lots of people. You know, there's movements every year about, you know, there's like the red dress stuff that people do to make women more aware of heart disease and themselves and the kinds of conditions that you could have that can lead up to that can sometimes cause a person to drop dead of a heart attack, even when all the warning signs were there, they just didn't pay attention to. And there's lots of things that people do to make people in general aware of these kind of symptoms or these kinds of conditions. And being able to take that information to the doctor, to me, only seems like a good thing. Now, I'm also not a hypochondriac. I don't call the doctor every time I get a hangnail, worried it's going to be the thing that kills me. You know, because inevitably, if you go look up a hangnail on the internet, all you're going to find is websites that tell you how you're going to die from it. But so I've gotten a little better about that. Yeah, WebMD just tells you this is how a hangnail will kill you. So what I have found for myself is that I just feel a little better having that information for myself. And then if I need to go to a doctor about it, you know, if it turns out I'm consistently getting this alert about a super high heart rate or something like that, then it's useful to have that. And one thing that sort of sticks that in my mind and immediately makes me write off somebody who writes an article like this is that our own Jeff Gamet had this happen. He had eaten somewhere and thought he was doing okay, and then started feeling really like inordinately warm. And then his watch started telling him his heart rate was really, really high. And it turned out he was having a bad allergic reaction to something. And because he had the actual sort of recording information on his arm, this was, you know, even before series 4, he was just able to tell the, you know, he like started a workout or something and like it had alerted him to his high heart rate. And then he just started the workout. And so that it was recording his heart rate the whole time and went to like urgent care. It was like, yeah, this is what my heart rate is right now. And it turned out that he was having a really bad allergic reaction to something and was able to get that sorted out even sooner because he had something concrete he could take to the doctor when he walked into urgent care and not just, I feel funny, you know? Yeah. So, I know another person who's a friend of Mac Observer who also had the same sort of thing happen. Where being armed with heart rate information over the last couple of hours was one of the things that helped the doctor diagnose. Like, yeah, as a matter of fact, this is verging on, I don't know what they call it anymore, but there's like heart attacks. They're like minor heart attacks. Like, you're basically having a minor heart attack right now. And, you know, part of the reason we can tell that is because you have the heart rate information from your watch. So I feel like it's probably doing more good than harm. And if a few doctors take a few extra phone calls from people, I don't see how that's a bad thing if it's just because people don't understand what the results are that they're getting.
Yeah, I mean, definitely when it comes to health, better safe than sorry.
And particularly if your heart is doing something abnormal, that's fundamental. You know, that's not a hangnail. That's not... Mm-hmm. You know, like that's a thing that is absolutely indicative of something pretty serious going on for the most part.
Yeah. So I think my favorite quote from this. So the original article says the Apple Watch could also induce higher levels of anxiety for those who receive a correct diagnosis, particularly in those cases when the prescribed treatment is merely to keep an eye on the condition. And the Macalope says, the Macalope has heard that ignorance is bliss, but he's rarely heard that applied to cases of having a heart condition. Don't know things about your health. It'll just scare and depress you.
I loved that. I think my favorite is the bit when the person said, when the article says, the other health-related feature is the watch's ability to detect a potentially life-threatening heart condition. And the Macalope's reply was, wasn't life simpler when people just drop dead from time to time? Because that's where we are. And I feel like, you know, and then of course the article has this veneer of faux concern about how this is going to tax emergency rooms and urgent care places because everybody's going to be flooding in with all of this iffy information from their watch about what's happening. And part of that is that I feel like Apple wouldn't have been allowed to let some of this stuff out the door if it weren't reasonably reliable information. Like, not only could they not, because like they worked with the FDA on the ECG reading. Yeah, you know, we heard about that. And so first of all, like, it had to go through a certain number of, you know, and it had to go through a bunch of doctors, you know, who would have said, like, set the defaults to this because if it's above that, I want to know, you know. And that's the thing I think that makes me wonder about this article and the slowness of the news between Christmas and New Year's.
I think you hit the nail that it's just slow holiday news.
Yeah. And I really
bad news sells.
Yeah, and I just, yes, I would like to point out, we're not going to link anybody to the original piece. If you want to click on it, you can click on it from the Macalope. We will give you the Macalope article, because that's the far more entertaining read, and it keeps you from having to look at any of the actual article itself. And the thing about this, like I said, the thing about this is just putting more medical information in people's hands, I feel like, is never a bad thing. And one of the small features that I noted when I wrote up the ECG setup and what the steps are to go through the ECG setup, one of the things that I mentioned about it was that when you do the ECG, when it's done, it tells you what it found with, like, what the conclusion was. Like, do you have sinus rhythm, which means things are beating normally? Do you have a variance in some sort of way? It will tell you what that is. And then it says, if you're not feeling well, you can add symptoms. So that information all becomes part of what you can give your doctor, because it gives you the option to save it as a PDF, like all of your ECG information. So you can print that out and be like, my heart's beating real fast and I feel really funny and I'm, you know, like I'm sweaty and hot and everything's weird. You know, I'm sure that once there is the inevitable run on emergency rooms and doctor's offices, we will end up having to talk about that too. In the meantime, thank you, Andrew, for being on the show with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Please do, if you can, swing by iTunes and drop us a review. You can also email us at observations@macobserver.com, and you can talk to us on Twitter at @TMODaily. And I will talk to all of you tomorrow. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.